Ben Koch is an acoustician with a wide experience in the design and consulting of acoustical critical spaces. This involves situations where high-quality sound reproduction is essential, like in concert halls, theaters, and recording studios, but also in complex or harsh acoustic environments, like stations, tunnels, and stadiums, where good speech intelligibility is of primary concern. Like no other, Ben is at ease with natural room acoustics, as well as with the possibilities and limitations of electroacoustic systems, which also allow him to find unique but realistic solutions in difficult situations. Rooms designed by Ben have gained an international reputation for their acoustic quality, and this has resulted in consulting projects worldwide, from the USA, Canada, and Canada to China. And in fact, in this building, we have two control rooms designed by Ben. Thank you and welcome.
Thank you for being here. Yes, I'm going to discuss acoustic enhancement. And acoustic enhancement is a bit different than the sound reinforcement aspects we discussed the last couple of days. Acoustic enhancement is a way of giving the suggestion, at least, that you're doing things with natural acoustics and that it's not obvious to the audience that we use some electronic system for that. As with any system, you always have to ask yourself, what is the purpose of what I'm going to do? Why do I bring in a system? And what we want is to adapt the acoustic environment to the requirements of a specific performance. Like what Steve mentioned, we have an event going on and we want an acoustics that come with that. So we have a theater which is perfect for, let's say, opera. But we would like to use it for a symphony orchestra. That implies that we have a room which looks like this, and we want to change it acoustically so it sounds like this. To achieve that, what do you have to vary? The first thing that everybody mentioned is reverberation. Yeah, we change the reverberation. A drama theater has a reverberation time of less than 1 second. A symphonic concert hall needs to have 2 seconds reverberation time. Opera house, 1.6, 1.8, that's a bit dependent on fashion. Nowadays we want them longer, earlier days we wanted them shorter, but that's it. But an even more important thing to influence are the early reflections. Because we are not listening, we are listening to the tail because it blended all continuously in with the music, but that's at a relatively low level. The early reflections have much more energy relatively to the direct sound, are closer to the direct sound, and have a stronger influence on our perception and how we experience the room. Another important factor in that is the direction. Where does the sound come from? Very simple example that you all can understand. If you take the sound from my microphone, you feed that to a reverberator, and you put that reverberator at 2 seconds, but that reverberant signal is fed to the same loudspeaker as the direct sound from my voice, you don't have the experience that you are in a concert hall. It's just reverberants added to a signal. So the direction where it comes from is very important. Is it lateral? Is it medial? Is it an elevation? That's important things to play with in the design of a hall. Also very important is loudness. The loudness of an acoustic performance is one of the key parameters. If you have a hall with 2 seconds reverberation time, but too small in size, and you put in a full symphony orchestra, it simply is too loud. On the other hand, if the hall is too big, it's too weak, and you don't have the optimum performance. If you check out the top 3 concert halls for classical symphonic music, Boston, Vienna, Amsterdam, they differ in loudness no more than 2 dB, plus or minus 1 dB. If you look at the other halls in Baranek's book, with 2 seconds reverberation time, but not rated that high, these are either weaker or louder. Natural loudness is very important. Another example for that, I discussed that with Malcolm yesterday. We were preparing our session for one of our clients, and we want to calibrate the level he's playing that our session. When we demonstrate it in the office, it's no problem, we can do that. But the client, of course, wants a USB stick and take that home and listen on his own headphone. How do you control calibration? What we did is we took a natural voice, unprocessed, put that in as first track on. And we asked several people in the office, tune that to a comfortable level. That was the only description, comfortable level. What happened is that it reproduced within 2 dB to the same settings, because that's just a human voice with no effects. That's the comfortable level for, and there's a very little spread. So that was the instruction we gave the client. If you play this, first listen to the voice, put that at the comfortable level, and then you have approximate the calibration. Not a perfect calibration, but something that reproduces quite decently. Loudness is very, very, very important. Okay, we're going to vary the reverberation. How do we do that in natural acoustics? Room volume. Look up in your book. There you see, oh, we need so many cubic meters per seat depending on your application. That's straightforward. And if we have a symphonic concert hall with approximate 2 seconds, and we want the proper loudness, then we end up with 18,000 cubic meters and 2,000 seats. That's about it. If we're not talking about optimum loudness before non-reinforced applications and we want to vary the reverberation time, of course you can introduce absorption. And what Artec does, Russell Johnson, we introduce some reverberation chambers coupled to the room, coupled rooms, and influence the reverberation with that. And you could discuss if that's not a change of room volume, depending on how you couple it and how you look at the model. If we want to vary the reverberation with electronic enhancement, there essentially are 2 methods. You can put up a microphone in the reverberant field, pick up the natural reverberation of the room, feed that to an amplifier, reintroduce that at a different position in the room, so you're regenerating the reverberant energy. And you can show that if you reinforce the reverberant field with a certain amount, then you get an increase of reverberation time with the same amount. Disadvantage is that if you want a stable system without coloration, the amplification you can get is about 1%. So an increase of 1% in your reverberation time is not very impressive. We come back later to that, but essentially what you do in a system like that is you put install a number of independent channels, and if you install approximate 100 independent channels, so 100 microphones distributed over your room, 100 loudspeakers distributed over the room, you can approximately double the reverberation time of your room at the expense of 3 dB increase of reverberant level. Another way of doing it, and which appeals more to the sound engineers present here, is why don't we use one of our famous reverberators? Either Yamaha or Lexicon or whatever. Pick up the signal, grab the reverberant tail and introduce that in the room. And that's a method that works quite well. And then there are some distinctions in how you generate electronically that reverberation, but for the principle, it's not really important. The interesting thing is, how can we manipulate early reflections? Again, in natural acoustics, you introduce reflectors in which you steer those reflections the desired way. And if you got a reflection from a plane which is undesirable, you put some absorption over there, or you change the orientation. With electronic enhancement, as long as you pick up the signal, you can introduce a simulated reflection simply by using a delay. That's about the simplest thing you can think of. And you can redistribute that energy any way you want. With a reflector in a natural acoustic environment, you have to be sure that there is energy reaching that reflector. With an electronic system, you only have to make sure that the sound is being picked up by the microphone, and you have an extremely freedom on where you can put that loudspeaker. So you can introduce that reflection anywhere, even unnaturally. I said the direction where the sound comes is very important. And in natural acoustic, the tool you have is room shape. A shoebox hall sounds different from a fan-shaped hall. And also, the ratio width compared to height has an influence on overall direction of the sound and how it's perceived. If you are in a cathedral with a very long reverberation time, so essentially with a poor localization, you experience that you are on the boundary of the volume. You are on the floor and the building is extremely high, and you experience that the reverberation is coming from above, which is different from a larger room with the same reverberation time where you are more in the middle of the reverberant field. That's room shape. Again, you can play around with absorption and reflective planes, but that's more a tool for smaller rooms. With electronic enhancement, because almost by definition you have a lot of loudspeakers distributed over the room, it's just a matter of how much energy you feed to that specific loudspeaker group. And if you want a high degree of lateral sound, you have more energy in your sidewall loudspeakers than you have in the ceiling. But if you want to simulate a cathedral, you need a relatively high amount of energy from the ceiling with some added delay to lift the ceiling up. Loudness, how you control loudness, we discussed that briefly. It's inverse proportional to the volume and the absorption. And the absorption in a hall for acoustical music is the audience. You don't want a very expensive orchestra playing on stage and absorb that expensive energy in your curtains. You want it to reach the ears of the audience. That's the primary principle. You cannot always avoid some absorption, but essentially you want. And that's why the room volume is related to the number of seats. If you have an enhancement system based on regeneration, the loudness is directly proportional to RT60, because the principle is based on reinforcement of the reverberant sound. And essentially, everybody is sitting beyond the critical distance. So doubling of reverberation time means 3 dB increase in level. That would not be a big deal if enhancement systems, not most of the times, are used in relatively small halls, which you want to sound like a bigger hall. So you already have a too large room volume. So if you use a regeneration system in a small hall to generate your reverberation, you will increase the loudness while it already is too loud. So you get farther away from your optimum. If you have an inline system, however, you are relatively independent on the choice of your reverberation time. You can loosen that a bit. There will always be an increase in level because you are adding energy. You are not consuming energy, you are adding energy. But you can do a doubling of a reverberation time with about 1 dB increase in level instead of 3 dB. And that depends on a lot of parameters and also what type of acoustics you want to simulate. But yeah, you are less restricted than in the regeneration systems. All of you know, the moment I introduce a microphone connected to a loudspeaker in the same room, we get feedback. And how do we minimize the feedback? How do we control it? And point one, the first thing to look at is, okay, pick up your sound properly. Have the proper microphone configuration. Like this, microphone nearby, not suitable for an orchestra, but microphone distance is important. Directivity properties of the microphones are important. Number of microphones are important, things like that. And they all influence the feedback mechanism. And of course, the loudspeakers. How many loudspeakers, where are the loudspeakers aimed at? Generally, in an enhancement system, you want the loudspeaker to excite the room volume and not, like in a reinforcement system, address the audience only. But in some situations, like again in Steve's example, where you have already excessive acoustic conditions where you want to bypass, then a directive loudspeaker aimed at the audience is what you want. And that also gives you the possibility to get a further decoupling between loudness and reverberation time. And of course, what you all know is loudspeaker-microphone relation. Never aim your loudspeaker towards the microphone it's fed from. But as mentioned, we have a number of microphones, a relatively large number of loudspeakers, and we are constantly fighting feedback. And how do we minimize that? And one way of doing that is what they do with the regeneration system is that you have multiple independent channels, because each channel will have its own feedback criteria, but in an acoustic sense, all will be added. So having multiple independent channels is a good thing. And you can do the independence in two ways. The very old one, as implemented with the assisted resonance, was, okay, we use a bandpass filter. We put the microphone in a position in a room. And in fact, they did the other way. They put a loudspeaker in the room, looked for the point where the response due to that loudspeaker for a certain frequency was as low as possible, put the microphone, put the filter for that frequency. and then for the other one. So each microphone loudspeaker combination had a relatively high gain, but for a limited frequency band. And they installed approximate 100 different filters, and that more or less worked. Another approach is keep the gain low. Stick to below that 1% gain, but introduce, distributed over the room, a large number of channels, which all are essentially the same. And that works. Yeah, the next step in avoiding feedback is just filtering out the feedback frequency with linear EQ. So for every channel, you can apply an EQ and optimize. And because all the speakers and microphones are on different positions, that will be different settings. So overall, you still will have a more or less flat response. The interesting trick, of course, is what we call decorrelation. Why do we have feedback from that loudspeaker-microphone combination? Because the signals are correlated. If you decorrelate that, then you don't get that built up. And essentially, the simplest way to understand to do that is, we make the system time-variant. We put the microphone, loudspeaker, crank up the gain, and we see that the feedback builds up, but before it reaches instability, you change the transfer chain by changing a delay, introducing a variant phase filter, switching, of course, fading like Yamaha does in the AVS, acoustic field sense, system, but you make it time variant. So before you reach feedback, you change the loop, and then it has to restart all over again. There are some ways of doing that time invariant. What you do with a time invariant system, it's you create a transfer function which has a random phase response, and that will prohibit the build-up. It's not very complicated to do, but it requires some thinking and some processing. Another way to consider is what we do with telecommunication is echo cancelling. If you know the transfer function from loudspeaker to microphone, you apply the inverse in your feedback chain, then you won't have problems. That's not generally not applicable if you have a relatively large distance between microphone and loudspeaker, because then the transfer function varies with occupation, temperature, or humidity, and you will have an unstable system by definition. But some enhancement systems have a loudspeaker and a microphone very close together. And those have a very well-defined transfer function, which has minimum influence from the acoustic environment they're placed in, and those can use echo cancellation techniques to achieve feedback. There are a number of systems available, and this list is far complete, and there are a number of systems in here which were never commercialized and other are not available. But it's just, it's a lot of people have put energy in this and worked about this. It's a challenging thing. What I did try to do, based on the information, and most of the information from those suppliers is proprietary, so you have to read between the lines and to get the information, but this is what I got out of it, and it might No, there are not real inquiries. Some claim that they have developed from this further, but okay. First of all, a number of systems and which principle they are based on. So we have MCR, which was introduced by Philips in the 70s, yeah, which is multi-channel reverberation, as they call it, simply reinforcement of the reverberant field. 100 channels, at maximum gain, you get approximate doubling of your reverberation time. And that worked, but only reverberation time. Another old system, old is not the right word, sorry, Steve. Early introduced, yeah, that's proper political correct. Laris, based on the Lexicon reverberator, and of course, Lexicon reverberators, certainly at that time, were very well sounding, so it was a logical choice. Originally developed by David Grissinger, based on all pass reverberators. And yeah, a very clever and still valid approach. In our small country, we were very active. So we had MCR from Philips. We also have ACS, which originally created the kind of FIR filter based on bucket regrade memory. There was CEUP, which originally started with Lexicon parameters and later on with their own processors based on FIR processors. Carmen is a French system, which promotes itself as being a negative absorption. It's a loudspeaker microphone combination, and the sound being picked up by that microphone is reproduced by that loudspeaker brought back into the room, and by extreme control of the feedback. You get more energy from that location that originally hit that. So, yeah, you could call that negative absorption, if you like. Constellation, from Meyer nowadays, which is, a complex system. It's the theory is based on regeneration, but they do that in an external electronic simulated chamber, and they are not quite clear on what's happening in there. So, what you do with enhancement systems is black art, and that's, based on information like that, you get that impression. Other people think that's just applied science in a creative way. Vivace is a German system which is similar to the CEUP system. It's largely based on what they did, but they use a sampling convolution reverb, so to sample. Sampling sounds very good because, okay, I go to Boston, measure the impulse response of Symphony Hall and introduce that. What you have to take and keep into mind is that it always convolutes with the natural acoustics of the hall you're in. But you also have to keep in mind that a room is not defined by a single impulse response. You would have to take impulse response from each instrument position, each seat in the house, and then find a way around that. Oh, that's a bit complicated. So, yes, a convolution reverb is very interesting because you have a very high density in your reflection pattern. But there is more than just copying the response of a room. VAP is on here simply because it was. What it was is similar to Carmen, but in addition to the reinforced energy of Carmen does, they also add a convoluted reverb. So it's a hybrid system in that, but they're not very active commercially, so you would really have to dig to find where to get it. But it's from Holland. So we're very well represented because we have 4 out of 9? Yeah, 8. So we're very good. But Steve claims that he has done more than all the rest combined, so that's... Okay. Distinction between systems, that's what I want to discuss, and that's how do you pick up the signal? And that's related largely with the principle of what the system is based on. So MCR, Constellation, Karman, VAP have their microphones in the reverberant field. And the others, most of them have them in the intermediate distance, relatively nearby the stage, but in what you in recording or reinforcement would call overhead microphones. Sufficient distance, so the sound of the ensemble has blended, but close enough to have not too much influence from the natural reverberation in the room. ACS has a different approach. They deliberately want near-field miking, which in a stage setting is complex, but typically they are overhead the stage with a relatively large number of microphones because not every microphone covers the entire stage. And of the advantage is that they get more direct sound, less from the hall, can get more reverberation. They have more input, and if you look at the matrix, they can have more knots in their matrix, so they can get somewhat higher gain. The disadvantage is that everything that's going on in the flight tower, is conflicting with the microphones. So you have to be very careful with them, and you have to very careful guard that the positions of the microphones are not changed and controlled. This is a very blunt statement I made here, but it's just to make distinct, and most of the systems have some kind of hybrid approach. But based on the microphone placement, MCR, Karman, VAP have no control over early reflections, simply because the microphones are too distant. The delay from the stage to the microphone is so long that no way you're going to introduce an early reflection. Constellation, in its basic concept, also doesn't have that. But Constellation, because of their digital matrix, relatively early and relatively easy, could add some near-field microphones specifically for early reflection generation. But it's not in the basic principle of the system. But it's a hybrid approach, which of course is valid. No discussion about that. I mentioned that the direction where your enhanced sound comes from, or your acoustic sound from, is important, that you would like to influence it. But again, based on the same thoughts, the regeneration system have virtually no control on the redistribution of your energy. While the systems with the inline systems, yeah, you have a very large degree of freedom, and then you can control the distribution of your energy, and you can control very easily the initial delay of the start of your reverberation. The same thing comes up, what happens with the gain of my system in relation to RT60? It's the same distinction. Regeneration system, yeah. Okay, when I crank up the reverberation, it gets louder. The other systems, no, it doesn't need to be. Yeah, controlling your feedback, microphone speaker relation, most of the systems are distant, with the exception of Karman and VAP, who can use echo cancellation as a control method. What's used to if any, used for decorrelation? Now, MCR fully relies on the microphone speaker distance. Most systems, as published, as known, as found out by listening, are time variant, also because that's the easiest to understand approach. CIAP is time variant, VAP claims to be in time invariant, and Constellation suggests to be, but they don't state it really. That's unclear if they are or not. What's the essence of being time invariant? Because what's the advantage? Most people will not detect a small time variance, and all suppliers are very careful in the amount of time variance. And it's a specific art. But some musicians are very sensitive. And the point is, I didn't hear it myself originally until somebody was tuning a piano with the enhancement system on. And then you heard that, yeah, the interference you get between the reverberant sound with the slide modulation and the hitting the piano. Once you've heard it, like most kinds of distortions, you're sensitive for it. So don't seek for it. If you don't experience it, don't seek for it. It's much more relieving. So overall, I'm doing fine, Wiesla. regeneration systems, assuming that it's introduced in a hall with a nice absorption by itself, only not the right value, can offer you a very good natural sounding reverberation with a very nice density. But they offer you only variation of RT60, so it doesn't change the character of the hall. And for instance, if you would like, there are different two-second halls. You can have Berlin, we've seen Berlin earlier today, which is a Vineyard hall, symphonic music with a high clarity. I showed Amsterdam, which is a completely different hall with much longer EDT with a higher reverberant level, which is, different sound, different. With the regeneration system, you have no control over that because that's the room shape, it's early reflection pattern. If you have an inline system, I could go to the extreme. I could introduce a very long EDT, just a bunch of reflections very early, without reverberation tail, and fool my client if I would like to. It would not be natural, but it's possible. But with a system like that, in the same space, you can create symphonic acoustics for Mozart and for Wagner, with approximately the same reverberation time, but completely different early reflection pattern. The problem with that is that the client needs to understand it, because if you give the client too many options, and everybody wants all the options, but then they have to select what to use, so the client has to be very knowledgeable of what the differences are. But the possibility is there. And particularly when you have projects, production per production, and you have the influence, you can tailor to the requirements of that moment. And that's a great tool. But because the reverberation is generated by the electronic device, and that's where it went wrong with a lot of the early experimenters, it's strongly dependent on the quality of your reverberator. And if it doesn't have sufficient dynamic range, if the reflection density is insufficient, you have a serious problem, and that's what you identify. That's not a good thing. So it's you need very, 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 very good reverberators. And the microphone configuration also has influence on what you can do. There are a few things I want to stress at the end of this. There's more to acoustics than reverberation time. Everybody, including myself, discusses room and we say, oh, it has that reverberation time. But we are fooling ourselves. There is much, much more. And that's something you can play with enhancement systems. This is one of my pet peeves. Acoustics should not be noticed. When we are sitting here for the conference and somebody over here starts discussing the acoustics of this auditorium, there's something wrong, either with the acoustics or the program. But in a good situation, and that's not only true for auditoria, that's also true for the lobby. If you enter a building and you walk in the lobby and the acoustics are annoying you, that's not a good thing. You should not notice it. That's a disadvantage for acousticians doing the job, because we only hear the complaints and nobody makes real compliments. Some things you might want to read. The second one specifically goes about the aspect of varying the perceived acoustics and the measured acoustics without changing reverberation time. That's not on an enhancement system, that's natural acoustics. Thank you.
So we have a little time for questions.
Thank you, Ben. That was very interesting. I was just wondering, there is the really early system in The Hague in the Gebouw voor Kunst en Wetenschappen, installed by Philips, and the one in later in the 60s in Royal Festival Hall in England. How do they sit in comparison to the systems you have?
Philips systems, all to my knowledge, Kunst en Wetenschappen, I'm not sure. That could be even an older ambifonic system, which used a tape loop, which I didn't mention. But it also could be an MCR system. In London, that was assisted resonance. That was the original installation, Royal Festival Hall. Mm-hmm. But that has been taken out a number of years already. It was unreliable. Because that was a very old, early installation, and they used Helmholtz resonators as the acoustic filters. So that's
That's an entirely different principle to
yeah. Yeah.
Thank you. Any other questions? Oh, one more from Steve.
I was waiting for that, Steve.
Questions. I don't need that because name. Don't need to do what it did. I'll just talk. How's that? Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Good. Okay. One of the things that Ben hit on but didn't really fully explain is that the means by which you implement acoustic feedback control sets the entire architecture for the system. That includes the number of transducers that you can use, microphones and loudspeakers, how they are interconnected, the quantities of each, the limitations, whether the system can be big or small, the number of independent channels that must be deployed, how they are separated, everything.
Yeah.
Okay? And none of these systems are compatible. So if you look at one design from one vendor, all of the infrastructure necessary to put in an MCR system as an example, in this country, we have to run conduit for mic marking. If you've got 100 microphones out there, what's your conduit cost? That has to get factored into the overall cost of the system. Those types of things are very important. Because if you switch from an MCR-based system to something different, you don't need any of that.
Yeah. No, it's the systems are... There are some overlaps there, but it's very difficult for a consultant in the design stage, in the building design stage, and say, okay, we're going to introduce such a system, but I leave a number of options open. And that's very tricky, let's put it polite. You have to decide on what system you go for, and you have to rely to a very large extent on the design service you get from that specific supplier, because they have all their own requirements. Microphones are the easy part, but loudspeakers, Steve was very specific in this project, oh, we need these loudspeakers over here. Another supplier said, oh, but we want these loudspeakers. We have different size, different back boxes, different positions, you name it. So it's that's a very thing. Systems are, in that sense, not compatible.
I have a question.
Yeah.
When you have a multi-purpose rooms and mics are scattered throughout the facility on a day-to-day basis, how does this impact the electronic acoustics?
Sorry, I'm not sure, Louis. You have a multi-purpose facility.
Yes. And the mic positions will vary within that space.
Okay. But the mic positions are not comparable to mic positions for a performer. So for essentially all the enhancement systems, the mic positions will be fixed, but they're not accessible for your production. It's part of your architecture, in fact, building structure. The problem comes when you say, I have this auditorium, which is flexible in its orientation. Extreme example against him. Okay, now the stage is here, tomorrow it's on the long wall. Oh, yeah. Then you have to discuss what you want. And in a number of situations where I did installation, we had different microphone configurations depending on the stage orientation, but still fixed, because you don't want the microphones to take away, put to another position, because that influences your feedback. So your system is tuned for that geometry, and you don't want to touch that. You can store that, and so you can apply a different setting for a different microphone set, but you don't want to walk around with them.
Okay, I think this is all the time we have, because the coffee break is beginning now, and in 10 minutes we will continue this topic downstairs in the MMR, and then 1 hour later there will be a paper session here at 5 o'clock. So thank you very much, Ben, and thank you all.